Welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast with Tim Elmore. I'm your co-host, Andrew McPeak. Tim, I'm excited about our conversation today.
Me too.
Yeah, this is going to be really good. And the reason it's going to be really good is because I think we're talking about something that we all feel a really strong pain. I know I feel it a lot of times when I'm spending time with students or talking to people who lead the next generation, and that is it feels like we live in a day and age where we kind of give up too easily.
Yeah, we do. And I think we feel that way because it's true. I've looked at the data. You look at data all the time. The day we live in is a world of speed and convenience and high tech. And that's wonderful. But the not so good side of the coin is when things get hard or long, we just want to stop.
Yeah, we just seem like the first thing that comes to our mind is to walk away or to give up or go back to something we're more familiar with.
So we hear about college transfers all the time. The number one phrase that K-12 educators say they hear from students is, "This is too hard." The student actually says, "This is too hard." So it's quite funny. That's, two things. Yeah. One, that they think it's too hard because we've been doing this math equation for decades now. But number two, that they'd have the audacity to just say, "Hey, bring this down a level."
Like every third grader before them hadn't figured it out,
Right. Yeah. So Andrew, you and I have talked about this. I actually have read about two countries in our world today that are writing legislation for two-year marriage contracts.
Unbelievable.
Two-year marriage contracts, meaning, you know, we're just asking you to sign up for 2 years because, you know, you might get bored or you might want to switch gears and try someone new.
Trial run.
Yeah. So the sad thing is that theoretically could mean that a young child would have nine dads if every 2 years between 0 and 18, they got a new marriage partner. Now, I'm just talking theory, but I'm thinking, what kind of world is this going to be if we cannot stick with things when the glitz and glamour are gone?
Yeah, that has real implications for us. I remember one thing you always talk about is the reality of today's generation pacing in front of the microwave, you know?
Yeah, that's
and
right.
I wasn't around when the microwave was invented, but I'm sure people are like, this is unbelievable. Yeah, I don't have to put my leftovers in the oven, you know? Yeah, yeah. And today's generation, it's still too slow.
We're saying, what's taking this muffin so long? It's 60 seconds long. You know, it's crazy. Well, just a few years ago in our work with one of the sports teams we work with, the Atlanta Braves, one of the minor league hitting coaches said that he was working with a young player, minor league player, on his swing. And the player struck at a ball, swung his bat three times, threw the bat down and said, "This isn't working." And the coach says, "Well, not yet. You've just swung three." He goes, I've tried it three times. He goes, "You're going to need to try it 3,000 times."
Yeah.
But there's a picture for us. I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but we think in three tries, it should all work out. And really, if we're going to master anything, it may take 3,000 times.
Yeah, the idea that you could get that far and not realize that, you know, when so many people like Malcolm Gladwell kind of popularized that idea of 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
And it just seems like there's no thought process there on that. That's crazy.
So recently, I had this conversation with a human resource executive at Bank of America. She was orienting new employees, most of them right out of college. And one young lady, a young professional right out of college, just raised her hand and said, "When's spring break?" Now, she was assuming there was some sort of break halfway through, you know, in March or April.
Yeah, because she had had one her whole life.
That's right.
Up
so
to
she
that
had
point.
To say, you know, we keep working all the way through the year. Now, again, we laugh. And again, I'm not trying to be cruel. I'm just saying, what kind of mindset are we conditioning unwittingly in our young when we think everything should be quick and easy, when really life doesn't work that way?
And I think that's the important thing is, you know, we're not making fun of the lack so much as saying that there's another much better way. Yeah. And that's what's so encouraging, I think, about our conversation today is because we've got two stories of two young people who looked at the obstacles in front of them and they said, "Nope, not today. I'm going to win this fight."
That's right. And so resilience, grit, this whole idea of bouncing back is really, we have two people that are pictures of this, and I can hardly wait to get to this.
Me too.
Sarah, thanks for being with us today. We are very excited to have someone who really exemplifies the habits and attitudes of a life-giving leader. We've talked about this. We've been with each other at a Habitude certification, and it was such an honor to have you there. Would you start by just sharing a little bit about your background and the journey that you have had through college? And specifically, I'd love you to talk about your time as a student at Ohio State University.
Yes, well, thank you very much for having me and inviting me to share my story with you. So I grew up in a very small town in Ohio called Louisville, Ohio, and I grew up as a competitive gymnast. Okay. I did competitive gymnastics for 13 years, and I always joke with people that I knew how to do a back handspring before I knew how to read a chapter book. So ever since the time that I was a very little girl, I just remember my entire life revolved around gymnastics. So I grew up attending practices many, many hours a week and really devoted much of my life to my sport. However, by the time I got to high school, I sustained some severe spinal injuries my freshman year that forced me to take some time off and go through spinal decompression treatment. So my issues were that I had 6 bulging discs in my back, and for those of you that understand spinal injuries, that's not good. So just being 12 or 13 years old at the time, I was one of the youngest to undergo spinal decompression treatment. And I would go in 3 times a week, and they would literally in a non-creepy way, kind of pull my spine apart to allow the oxygen to get back into my discs. And it was actually very relaxing, and it was an incredible process. But after I was cleared and given the okay to go back, I went back my sophomore year more determined and more ready than ever to really accomplish my dreams of going to college on an athletic scholarship and just really achieve all of the dreams that I felt God had put on my heart. But unfortunately, a couple months into returning, I sustained all of those injuries again. All of the discs rebulged, and this time I also had a sacroiliac joint injury. So the doctors told me at that point that I was done forever with gymnastics, which was very, very disheartening. And I really struggled with my own personal identity and figuring out what I was going to do with my life. It completely changed my outlook on where I saw myself going, but I ultimately landed at the Ohio State University. And I went there because I was very interested in architecture, and they had an incredible program. And after I visited the university, I fell in love with the people and ended up going and pursuing my architecture degree from Ohio State and graduated in 2016. Okay. But that's not to say that I still didn't face a lot of those moments where I was kind of questioning what I was doing, where I was going, and how my dreams kind of fit into all of those experiences. Because after I lost that dream of being a collegiate gymnast, I was scared to dare to dream again, because I was scared that I wouldn't be able to fulfill my dreams. But while I was in college, I was looking for ways to pay for my education, because I came from a very small middle-class family, and it was on me to pay for my education. And that's what led me to the Miss America organization.
Interesting. So you've just said a mouthful there.
Yes.
So as an athlete, you had to bounce back and be just a person. In other words, as a gymnast, I, when I think about sports, Sarah, I think gymnasts, as much as any other sport, get their start so early. How old were you when you started gymnastics?
I was almost 2.5.
Yeah.
Almost 3 when I started.
So we're not playing baseball at 2.5. We're not playing football at 2.5. But so much of your identity would be naturally tied into your sport. And when that's taken away, you've got to have something that's outside of sport that you base who you are on, something that can't be taken away. So I want to underscore that. Go ahead.
Yes. And I would just say, you know, unfortunately, I don't think my parents realized how much emphasis I put my own personal identity into my athletic career. Yeah. Because my parents, they were athletic growing up, but sports weren't their entire life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they were pretty blind to the challenges that I faced. And I think that that's what led to kind of many months of depression after I lost my sport, was the feeling that I didn't have anyone to turn to, and I didn't know who to talk to about these issues, because most people dismissed it because they're like, oh, you lost your sport. Yeah. You can still walk. Yeah. You can still talk. So it wasn't a big deal to a lot of people, but to an athlete, when that is your entire life, when you have worked days and years and months on achieving a goal, it is very difficult. And I found that a lot of athletes struggle when they're forced to give up their athletic career.
No doubt about it. Yeah. We find it everywhere we go. So our big theme today, as you well know, is really the whole idea of resilience. How does one bounce back? And not just bounce back, but somehow use that obstacle to catapult you forward in a new, perhaps, direction. So I want to dig deeper. You suffered that injury. Tell me about what your experience was like and what you did to overcome. You said this whole thing led you to an involvement with the Miss America Association, and you specifically, I mean, you became Miss Ohio. Talk about that.
Yes. Well, I think the first step, I think when anyone experiences an obstacle or a challenge, and while it's, I think, the most difficult thing to do sometimes, is understand that there is a reason. There is a reason that you are facing that obstacle, and it is out of our control. I know that I really struggle with that because I personally like to have control in my life. And that was something that I felt that gymnastics gave me, was this sense of control. Yeah. And when that was no longer the issue, it was difficult for me to allow the emotions to first, I think you have to feel those emotions. Yeah. And if you try to shut them out, then that's not going to lead you to any sort of road to recovery. Yeah. So allow yourself to feel upset, but then understand that there's a reason, and you have to then go to work to find the reason why you're facing the obstacle, and dig deep to really understand how you can use that challenge to then help you succeed in the future. And for me, it was the Miss Ohio organization. So gymnastics had provided this sense of determination and hard work. And I applied that to my Miss Ohio career. And it took me 5 years to win Miss Ohio. So I competed 5 times for the title. In the first 3 years, my talent was dance. So even though I wasn't allowed to do gymnastics anymore, I felt that dance would not kind of bring back those injuries because I wasn't tumbling and there wasn't a lot of compression on my spine. But unfortunately, I was wrong. And 3 years in, I was starting to have symptoms of the spinal injuries again. And my doctors told me after 3 years that I was done dancing. And That was tough because I was third runner-up at Miss Ohio that year. I felt that this dream was so close to coming to fruition. And yet again, I was very upset. I felt that I had this dream again that was being taken away because of these injuries. And so I very distinctively remember the moment that I decided that I wasn't going to allow the injuries to prevent me from accomplishing yet another dream. So I decided while I was a senior at The Ohio State University, I was finishing up my degree, working part-time and taking honors level thesis classes, that I was also going to learn how to play the piano.
Okay. Now I want to make sure everybody heard that correctly. So it's not like you're twiddling your thumbs with nothing to do, but on top of all your studies and everything else, you're going to take up piano. Okay. Real quick. Tell us that story.
Well, and to add, you know, just another layer to it, I can't read sheet music. I can't read any sort of music. So I came from a very musically gifted family, and I was always the oddball. I was the athlete. Yeah. I loved athletics. I didn't want to play an instrument growing up, when all of my cousins played an instrument and all of my aunts and uncles either sang or played an instrument. And actually my great aunt and great uncle, both, they had attended Juilliard. And so when I say musically gifted, I mean,
you're serious.
These people, they know what they were talking, they knew what they were doing, but I had no idea how to read music. So I had to learn by ear, and through visualization techniques, which is often referred to as the Suzuki method. So here I am, in my apartment, my little college apartment, teaching myself how to play this song. And so that fourth year at Miss Ohio, I knew the piece and I really felt comfortable, except I got to Miss Ohio and realized that I'd never played in front of an audience before. And nerves are a lot different with piano than they are dancing. So to say I botched my talent that year is quite the understatement. I somehow managed to make top five that year. I was fourth runner up, but I think the judges might have been tone deaf because it's pretty bad. And I swore I was never going to go back to Miss Ohio. And unfortunately, I think, you know, now that the viewers and the audience know that I'm Miss Ohio, kind of gives away my ending. But after that fourth year, I was never going back. I was like, you know what? Forget it. I embarrassed myself. I let everyone down. I was done. But then my mom got very sick a couple months later. And so it very much changed my perspective on second chances and yet again, resiliency. She got better and she's doing very well today. But I knew that if she could get through that, then I could face my fears yet again and go back to the stage. And this year, and not only was I lucky enough to walk away with the title of Miss Ohio, but I actually won the preliminary talent award. And that moment actually might have been a little better than winning Miss Ohio. Don't tell anyone that.
Yeah.
But it was definitely a humbling experience.
Crazy. So as I'm listening to your story, Sarah, I'm picking up a few insights. One, early on, you had to make a decision. I'm not going to let this setback, define me. Two, you talked about, I want to find the why. There's a purpose and reason for everything. I want to find that reason, so I put my finger on it. You also talked about allowing yourself to really face the pain and the emotion of what's happening, but then find a way to redefine both your identity issue, your talent issue. I know you may not say this, but you are a picture of a resilient person. You just keep bouncing back, and you won Miss Ohio, which has given you a platform with schools and other organizations. I don't know. I guess I'd like you to talk about your work right now. I know you have the privilege of traveling around the state of Ohio, especially. What's your message when you're in front of students now?
Well, I think it really is definitely, through Habitudes, understanding the difference between who you are and what you do. Mm-hmm. And there is a very clear line there. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. I didn't understand that growing up. I thought that there was no line, that who you are and what you do were one and the same. But when we're able to separate our personal identity and our personal value from what we do, whether it's athletics, music, or your career even, and understand that your value doesn't lie in those abilities, it actually lies in your ability to make a difference in the world around you. That's my overall message. And then it's also, like you said, resiliency, encouraging students that when they do face struggles or obstacles, that I always joke, I say, I got my degree in architecture because when one door closes, sometimes you have to become an architect and go and build a new door.
I love that.
So just allowing them to understand that they can make a difference and that because of their value, they have that ability. And then really encouraging them to chase their dreams. Mm-hmm. When I go into schools, and I know you've spoken about this, I feel like a lot of students are sometimes discouraged. Yeah. They're fearful of the future and they're really not sure if they can make a difference. So it's just allowing them to understand that their dreams matter and that they can truly accomplish anything that they set their mind to.
Yeah, I love that. And that's, I feel like you embody that. When I think about your life as an athlete, your life as a daughter, your life with a mom that was not well for a while, but there she was, the inspiration for you to go, man, if she can do it, I can do it. And that's kind of, I mean, thank God for moms that give us a picture of how you can do it in your own life station.
Absolutely.
It's just, I've said this to you before as we've been together. You've just been an encouragement to me. I'm old enough to be your dad, but I just appreciate the way I feel like you're mature beyond your years. And it's just going to be neat with this particular mindset that you have, who knows what you might be able to pull off, because you just keep reinventing yourself and yet going back to the identity that you know is true and that cannot be taken away. That's definitely a message that students need to have today, for sure. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And especially I've found in athletics, and that's why my actual personal platform is titled Athletics Today, A Lifetime of Tomorrows, because I think especially, like I said, the message is transferable to all people, but especially athletes need to understand that their true value doesn't lie on the football field or in the gym or on any sort of field, that their true value does, like I said, lie in their ability to make a difference. And whether it's through OneFluence or any program, that they can get connected with others and really strive to chase their dreams and their passions.
Yeah, that's exciting. Well, Sarah, thank you for showing us, not just telling us how to do life well. I know you don't claim to be this master sage at this point in your journey, but I feel like you're well on your way. We love you and believe in you, and thanks for sharing your story today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Tim, that was an incredible, incredible interview with Sarah. I'm also really excited that we're not done. We got one more interview, one more story that we want to share with you, and this one's from Timothy Alexander. So take us away, Tim.
Well, I'm excited to introduce another guest with us today, Timothy Alexander. Tim has become more and more known just from being on broadcast television. Tim is a former football player that was really one of the top recruited high school athletes in the state of Alabama when he was playing high school football. His story took a turn that I'm going to let him tell you about. But Timothy, if nothing else, is a story of resilience, grit, and what it means to bounce back and keep on going forward. So, Tim, thanks for being with us today.
Yes, sir. Thank you all so much, Dr. Elmore. Thank you for the opportunity to have me on today to just speak and just share my perspective with the audience today.
Absolutely. So, you know, our listeners are people that love kids. They're coaches, they're teachers, they're parents, they're employers of young people. But they all care about building grit and resilience into these young people. So I just want you to start and take a few minutes, and if you can, give us the headlines of what you were heading for in terms of a career goal, and then what happened that had made you have to adapt and shift gears just a little bit years ago.
Well, yes, sir. Well, as you mentioned, I was an athlete. I would play for Irwin High School under the coaching of Willie Miller, who played for the Rams back in 1981. And I became a top prospect in the state. And just my life just took a turn for the worse. I was in a very bad car accident my senior year in high school, wow, where I risked my life to save a two-year-old baby before we went off a cliff. And as I tell people, I never forget, I was walking one day and then rolling the next, because the day before my accident, I mean, I had just jumped in my coach's arm and had the leading block as a tight end to send my team to the playoffs. And my coach said, "You're going to school, you're going to school." And I remember just telling my mom, "Mom, I'm going to retire you one day. I'm going to come back and take care of the family." All because in 2006, our house burned down. My brother died in a car accident. And so the dreams of the family rested on the baby boy's work, on everything that I could bring to the table. And I wanted to make a way for my family. And so my life took a turn for the worst. And here I am in the hospital. They're saying I'm brain dead, not going to be able to read and write and do anything. And that led me down a door of being depressed and suicidal, all because I felt as if I had nothing else to offer the world anymore. I gave up on athletics, didn't care for it anymore. But I never forget, my dream came back because one of my best friends, he told me, he said, "If anybody can turn this around, Tim, you can do it." And so I just spent some time and I prayed and asked God, "What is my life going to be? What's my dream? Give me a dream." And I had a dream. I was playing football at UAB and my hair was cut and everything. And I woke up the next morning after my dream in pursuit. I tell people it was like a high speed chase. I wasn't stopping until I was able to conquer my dream. And that led me to UAB, where I became the first paraplegic to receive a full ride in football here at UAB. And I overcame depression, overcame suicidal. And I kept my promise to so many people that if you can just believe it and work hard for it and understand what it is that you want to do, what it is that you want out of life, and why you want to do these things, and why is it that you feel you should have these things, that takes care of the how. And that's why I'm here today, because I had to find out now what it is that I can do. I understood that I'll never play football again, but I can play through my teammates. I can play through the organization that gave me an opportunity. So I just found out what I wanted to do, why I wanted to do it, and that was going to take care of the how. And that's how I'm here in front of you all today.
I love this. So just to clarify for our listeners, you were this highly recruited athlete. I mean, Florida, University of Florida and other schools, Division I, Power 5 schools. Suddenly you're in the accident, so they're not interested, but you came back another way. And it's my understanding that you only get a scholarship if you can add value to the team. You just found a way to add value that was on the sideline rather than on the field itself. So talk about real quick what had happened. I know you don't want to brag, but what was it at the NU that made the coach at UAB say, we want you to still come on the team?
Right.
And,
well, I never
add value.
Right. Well, I never forget when I got to UAB, I had a plan. I had to figure out my way in. So I said, I'm going to try to find a job in athletics. And I started working in the ticket office selling tickets. And I would sit behind the desk and the audience and me, and the people would come in the ticket office and say, hey, do you play football? And I'm like, I mean, I'm like, clearly they can see this guy in the wheelchair, but I found out they couldn't see it because the wheelchair is behind the desk. I said, well, I don't play football, but I want to play. And they said, well, you should go and meet the coach. You should meet the coach. And we had a Christmas dinner one day, and I got a call and said, hey, they're having an athletic Christmas party, and we want you to meet the head coach of UAB football. Matt Wilt was my boss at the time. And I started calling everybody. That's my dream. I'm going to play football. I'm going to play football because I knew when I told the coach my dream, I believed in it. He was going to believe in it. And so I went into the facility and I saw Coach McGee at his table eating with his wife and his kids. And I said, Coach, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm going to be one of the greatest tight ends that ever came through UAB history. God told me I was. And he looked at me and he said, to find a young man to have as much as faith and courage as you have, I want you a part of this team. He said, I see you at 5 a.m. workouts. But before you come to 5 a.m. and workouts, you got to go and see Mike Jones. So I go through our athletic center and I go in. And as soon as I go through the door, Mike Jones yells out, are you here to play football? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, I told him my story. And so I went out to practice the next morning at 5 a.m. and the guys were stretching on the side of the fence. And I just started doing what I could because they were looking at me funny. And I was looking at them like, you know, why are they staring at me? And so Coach McGee yells out, skill guys on the line. And in high school, I was a receiver and a tight end. And he said, skill guys on the line. So I took the brakes off the wheelchair. I ran up to that line and he said, get in your position. And he got in his position. I got in our position, which the receiver stands, and Coach McGee blew his whistle, and I started running around the track. Well, I saw the guys looking at me, but I just kept on pushing. And so, of course, we didn't make it on time, and Coach McGee said, skill guys on the line. And I had every opportunity to not get back on the line, but that was my time to say, you know what? We're not going to make excuses. We're just going to go with it. So what? Deal with it. We got to do it. And so we got on the line and he blew it and I pushed around the track again. Well, at the end of that day, he told me he wanted me to break it down. He wanted me to break it down. And we normally used to break it down champions on three. And so that day I broke it down on family, family on three, family on me, one, two, three, family. And we became a huge family because right then we knew from that day forward, it was not going to be any excuses. And whenever you wanted to make an excuse on why you had to run and why you got to do this and why you got to run stadiums, just look over there on the sidelines and you will see your teammate, Timothy Alexander, doing push-ups and sit-ups the entire practice. And so I did that to take away excuse, to let them know, man, we are all in this together.
So I love this story and I'm just imagining what it'd be like to be your coach. So you're not going to be perhaps on the field for my team, but on the sideline, you're modeling work ethic. You're modeling a great attitude. You're modeling tenacity. I'm staying with us when I'm the slow. I'm rolling, not running. And and so you're adding value. You're lifting the culture of that team. And I know you don't want to brag, but you're adding as much value as any other tight end, quarterback, running back, lineman because of what you're actually doing on the sideline. I love this. This is exactly the picture of resilience that I believe this emerging generation needs. Tim, let me ask you one more question. We're going to have you back where we have more time, but if you could say as a grown man now, who, by the way, who's about to get married, congratulations.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
What would be some insights that you could add? What have you learned this side of the story now? As a grown man, what would you say to coaches, parents, teachers, employers that they could add to students who just need to learn these same lessons that you had to learn the hard way? What would you say?
Right. And this is so beautiful because I just got done teaching this all day. It's no matter what life brings you, no matter the hardships or the challenges or anything it is that you face, you always must remember what it is that you want out of life. Mm-hmm. what it is you can bring to life, why you feel you can do this, and that's going to take care of the how, because this is who the person is.
That's good.
Because I understood that I know I'll never be able to physically play again, but I can play through my teammates, through just telling people, take advantage of the opportunity. Because if you take advantage of the opportunity, that gives you the right to be the best in your game. Because the only way you take advantage of it is if you just, you go at it every single day, regardless of the hardships you face. So yes, it's cold outside and nobody wants to be outside in the cold. I know I don't want to be outside in the cold. It makes my bone ache and I get locked up real bad. But because I don't play for myself, because I'm taking away excuse and providing opportunity, I vow myself as a living example, because I know what it is I want to do, why I want to do it, and that takes care of the how I do what I do every single day.
Yeah. So the what and the why takes care of the how. I love that. I love that. That's so easy to remember.
W plus W equals H. What plus Y equals the
how. There's our mathematician, ladies and gentlemen,
there
right there.
There you go.
Timothy, yes, sir. I love you as a friend, but I appreciate what you've modeled. I know there are days, even now, that are not easy.
Yes, sir.
And you're going to be married. You're going to be the provider. Your fiance asked you to get down on one knee to propose to her, and you found a way to get out of the wheelchair and get on one knee to propose to her.
Sir.
You find a way to get the job done. Listeners, I just want you to know, Timothy is not only a dear friend, he's on our speaking team now. And he has been such an added value to so many athletic departments and student groups. So just know, please contact us if you want to hear this story live and even tailor it. Tim, you have customized this story and what you teach to so many different groups across the country now. It's just been phenomenal to see how you've been used. Thank you for joining us on this podcast. We're going to have you back, and we'll have you tell even more details of the story.
Yes, sir. Thank you all again.
You bet.
Well, Tim, the only word I have right now is wow, because I think we just heard two incredible stories of a young man and a young woman who have taken on life's obstacles and challenges, found a way to overcome them. But the reality is, like, that's their story, but it's not the story of so many young people today. I think one huge pain that a lot of people feel is they're leading young men and women who quit. Or give up too easily. And so I'm curious, when you get the question, I know you get this question all the time when you're speaking with adults who lead young students, what advice do you give to that parent, that teacher, that coach on how do you build resilience in students today?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's possible to build resilience and grit in students unless you answer the questions that Timothy Alexander brought up, the what and the
why. That's good.
Angela Duckworth wrote that great book on grit, and she reveals that when you get a student, or a student athlete for that matter, to commit to 2 seasons or 2 years, not just one, to anything, any extracurricular project, the data shows us when you can commit, they get committed to two, suddenly they overcome the, I just like it because it's new, or I just like it because it's fun or novel. I'm in this.
They know it up ahead of time, basically.
So a couple of thoughts I would say. Number one, I think we need to press our students and our young people to really answer the question of what do you really want and why. The what and the why leads to the how. I love what our friend Andy Stanley says. Don't, when someone says what they want to do, don't say how, say wow, and then get to the how later.
Okay, that's good.
So that's one. The second thing, Andrew, I keep thinking about our habitude. Rubber bands and workouts.
Yeah.
So here's the image. I want you to think about this imagery, listeners. Rubber bands and workouts are very instructive when it comes to resilience and when it comes to grit. I believe, first of all, that life is like a workout and that people are like rubber bands. Here's what I mean. Whenever you go into a gym or a fitness center, you know you're inviting pain. That's what you're there for.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, that's right. So you don't go in to watch people lift weights. You don't go in to say, I just like to look at the weights or look at the treadmill. I'm going to get on it. That's how life is. And I think far too often we've not conditioned our kids to think this way.
Yeah.
Hard is bad. Slow is bad. Mm-hmm. You know, we think
they don't walk into the classroom thinking, I've got to do some work today.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. In fact, they want the teacher to do the work. You know, spoon feed me, please.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to put words in the mouths of students, but we've often had students.
Yeah. We've definitely seen it, at least.
So if we can begin to use this metaphor, students, life is like a gym, and you're going to build muscles like resilience, like patience, like work ethic, if you jump into activity that's going to cause that muscle to be built. And conversely, we're going to atrophy. Our muscles are going to atrophy in patience or work ethic if we never really work them. So
yeah, that's
we got to think this way. But secondly, I want you to think about it. Think about a rubber band. A rubber band is really only useful when it's stretched.
Yeah.
It's not really useful just sitting on the table.
It's its purpose.
So it is with you and me.
Yeah,
so it is with our students. We become very useful only when we're stretched. And so we've got to have them, we got to teach them to welcome. Maybe you have a rubber band in your hand when you're teaching this. I've done that. So have you, Andrew.
Yep.
But we're stretched and then we become very, very useful. And rubber bands bounce back.
That's right.
So that's what resilience is all about. So maybe those metaphors are helpful handles to this whole idea of what we've heard from Sarah and Timothy today.
That's fantastic. Thanks for that, Tim. And I invite you guys to talk about rubber bands and workouts next time you're talking to your students. Again, I also want to remind you, if you want somebody like Timothy Alexander or one of our other speakers, we have some really incredible speakers on our team, Tim, to come to your organization, to your school, to your team, just check us out, growingleaders.com. You can see all those speakers on there. If you have comments or questions, we actually want to hear from you. We take what you say and it impacts this podcast, what we talk about and those things. So email us at podcast@growingleaders.com. We would really, really love to hear from you. And then also, will you do us a favor and hop on iTunes and rate us on iTunes, rate our podcast on iTunes. That actually really, really helps us get our podcast out to more people, because we really, our whole goal is to add value to people.
Yeah.
So we want to add value to more people. So thanks so much for listening today. We hope you learned something, and we'll see you next time.